That's the composer Ahmed Abdul-Malik on bass and on oud as well, with Oud Blues. It's from his album, The Music of Ahmed Abdul-Malik. And of course, I love these kinds of offbeat things, and I love this particular album. You also will be hearing Andrew Cyril on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the week has gotten off to a rather interesting start. Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General, has announced today a Justice Department probe of the Chicago Police Department, a probe of its patterns and practices, especially, she said, as it relates to the use of force and racial disparities in the use of force. The investigation comes almost 2 weeks after Officer Jason Van Dyke was indicted on first-degree murder charges for killing Laquan McDonald, 17, in a hail of 16 bullets. We'll be taking a look at that tomorrow, because there are other developments as well going on in Chicago, even as I speak, relating to another similar case occurring literally just prior to the killing of McDonald by police officer. So we'll be taking a look at that tomorrow. But I wanted to talk today about the president's speech last night. As you know, last Wednesday's mass shooting in San Bernardino, California, in which two shooters, Syed Rizwan Farouk, 28, and his wife Tashfeen Malik, 27, killed 14 people, wounded 21 others at a holiday party before themselves being killed in a shootout with police. This was the focus of a national address by President Barack Obama last night. It was an act of terrorism, he said, and his administration is dealing resolutely with the matter and related matters of terrorism, both domestically and in conjunction with U.S. allies around the world dealing with the same issue. So we will listen to what he has to say, what he did say last night, and then we come back. And I want you to pay particular attention to the language here, because we will be discussing several pieces that appeared to have been missing in his speech last night, and we will talk about why those things seemed to have gone missing in the president's speech. So here's President Obama addressing the nation last night. We'll play the entire speech so you get a full accounting from his point of view of what he felt the nation needed to know. President Obama.
On Wednesday, 14 Americans were killed as they came together to celebrate the holidays. They were taken from family and friends who loved them deeply. They were white and black, Latino and Asian, immigrants and American-born, moms and dads, daughters and sons. Each of them served their fellow citizens, and all of them were part of our American family. Tonight, I want to talk with you about this tragedy, the broader threat of terrorism, and how we can keep our country safe. The FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here's what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their co-workers and his wife. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. But it is clear that the two of them had gone down the dark path of radicalization, embracing a perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. They had stockpiled assault weapons, ammunition, and pipe bombs. So this was an act of terrorism designed to kill innocent people. Our nation has been at war with terrorists since al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 Americans on 9/11. In the process, we've hardened our defenses, from airports to financial centers to other critical infrastructure. Intelligence and law enforcement agencies have disrupted countless plots here and overseas and worked around the clock to keep us safe. Our military and counterterrorism professionals have relentlessly pursued terrorist networks overseas, disrupting safe havens in several different countries, killing Osama bin Laden, and decimating al-Qaeda's leadership. Over the last few years, however, the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino. And as groups like ISIL grew stronger amidst the chaos of war in Iraq and then Syria, and as the Internet erases the distance between countries, we see growing efforts by terrorists to poison the minds of people like the Boston Marathon bombers and the San Bernardino killers. For 7 years, I have confronted this evolving threat each and every morning in my intelligence briefing. And since the day I took this office, I have authorized U.S. forces to take out terrorists abroad precisely because I know how real the danger is. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no greater responsibility than the security of the American people. As a father to two young daughters who are the most precious part of my life, I know that we see ourselves with friends and coworkers at a holiday party like the one in San Bernardino. I know we see our kids in the faces of the young people killed in Paris. And I know that after so much war, many Americans are asking whether we are confronted by a cancer that has no immediate cure. Well, here's what I want you to know. The threat from terrorism is real, but we will overcome it. We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. Our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving in to fear. That's what groups like ISIL are hoping for. Instead, we will prevail by being strong and smart, resilient and relentless, and by drawing upon every aspect of American power. Here's how. First, our military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. In Iraq and Syria, airstrikes are taking out ISIL leaders, heavy weapons, oil tankers, infrastructure. And since the attacks in Paris, our closest allies, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom, have ramped up their contributions to our military campaign, which will help us accelerate our effort to destroy ISIL. Second, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground so that we take away their safe havens. In both countries, we're deploying special operations forces who can accelerate that offensive. We've stepped up this effort since the attacks in Paris and will continue to invest more in approaches that are working on the ground. Third, we're working with friends and allies to stop ISIL's operations, to disrupt plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Since the attacks in Paris, we've surged intelligence sharing with our European allies. We're working with Turkey to seal its border with Syria. And we are cooperating with Muslim-majority countries and with our Muslim communities here at home to counter the vicious ideology that ISIL promotes online. Fourth, with American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war. Doing so will allow the Syrian people and every country, including our allies, but also countries like Russia, to focus on the common goal of destroying ISIL, a group that threatens us all. This is our strategy to destroy ISIL. It is designed and supported by our military commanders and counterterrorism experts, together with 65 countries that have joined an American-led coalition. And we constantly examine our strategy to determine when additional steps are needed to get the job done. That's why I've ordered the Departments of State and Homeland Security to review the visa waiver program under which the female terrorist in San Bernardino originally came to this country. And that's why I will urge high-tech and law enforcement leaders to make it harder for terrorists to use technology to escape from justice. Now, here at home, we have to work together to address the challenge. There are several steps that Congress should take right away. To begin with, Congress should act to make sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security. We also need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons, like the ones that were used in San Bernardino. I know there are some who reject any gun safety measures, but the fact is that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies, no matter how effective they are, cannot identify every would-be mass shooter, whether that individual is motivated by ISIL or some other hateful ideology. What we can do, and must do, is make it harder for them to kill. Next, we should put in place stronger screening for those who come to America without a visa so that we can take a hard look at whether they've traveled to war zones. And we're working with members of both parties in Congress to do exactly that. Finally, if Congress believes, as I do, that we are at war with ISIL, it should go ahead and vote to authorize the continued use of military force against these terrorists. For over a year, I have ordered our military to take thousands of airstrikes against ISIL targets. I think it's time for Congress to vote to demonstrate that the American people are united and committed to this fight. My fellow Americans, these are the steps that we can take together to defeat the terrorist threat. Let me now say a word about what we should not do. We should not be drawn once more into a long and costly ground war in Iraq or Syria. That's what groups like ISIL want. They know they can't defeat us on the battlefield. ISIL fighters were part of the insurgency that we faced in Iraq. But they also know that if we occupy foreign lands, they can maintain insurgencies for years, killing thousands of our troops, draining our resources, and using our presence to draw new recruits. The strategy that we are using now, airstrikes, special forces, and working with local forces who are fighting to regain control of their own country, that is how we'll achieve a more sustainable victory. And it won't require us sending a new generation of Americans overseas to fight and die for another decade on foreign soil. Here's what else we cannot do. We cannot turn against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death, and they account for a tiny fraction of a more than a billion Muslims around the world, including millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. Moreover, the vast majority of terrorist victims around the world are Muslim. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. It's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity. But just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, It is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination. It is our responsibility to reject religious tests on who we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose. That kind of divisiveness, that betrayal of our values, plays into the hands of groups like ISIL. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers, our sports heroes. And yes, they are our men and women in uniform who are willing to die in defense of our country. We have to remember that. My fellow Americans, I am confident we will succeed in this mission because we are on the right side of history. We were founded upon a belief in human dignity, that no matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or what religion you practice, you are equal in the eyes of God and equal in the eyes of the law. Even in this political season, even as we properly debate what steps I and future presidents must take to keep our country safe, let's make sure we never forget what makes us exceptional. Let's not forget that freedom is more powerful than fear. That we have always met challenges, whether war or depression, natural disasters or terrorist attacks, by coming together around our common ideals as one nation and one people. So long as we stay true to that tradition, I have no doubt that America will prevail. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
That's President Obama addressing the nation last night. And I found it riveting. I found it very, very, very insightful. I found it very profound. And I found it to be a complete denial of what the history of this country has been and continues to be. This president literally engaged in a public act of denial and revisionism, the likes of which we have not seen in a long time. Here is a president speaking to a nation, extolling the virtues on which this country was founded, the founding fathers. I mean, the last thing you want to do if you are a student of history is to quote the founding fathers or to refer to this virtuosity that supposedly founded this country. This notion that we're all equal in the eyes of God. What? You see, I'm starting to sputter. That's not a good sign. It means I'm about to explode. I cannot believe these acts. These acts of denial, these acts of revisionism, these acts of just plain, this is propaganda. Now, this is not to say at all that we do not see that the killing of 14 people and wounding 21 others is a casual matter. But we see here that the president and people in the state legislatures at all different levels of government insist on telling us things that are simply not true, using this horrible situation to now achieve nefarious ends. Here's a president, the commander-in-chief, saying that terrorism began with 9/11. Now, you have to be completely out. You have to have been living under a rock to accept that as a truth. But he enters history, the history of terrorism with the attack of 9/11. Nothing before it matters at all. So terrorism, according to the president, who has just arbitrarily decided, I will rewrite history. I'll tell you when this all started. This all started with the attacks of 9/11. Hoping that you have no historical memory whatsoever, that you are completely without a point of reference, that you have no other way of understanding your reality except to wait to be told when things began to go bad. And even when he tells us that things began to go bad with Al-Qaeda, what does he say? Again, revising history, they began to go bad with Al-Qaeda's attack of 9/11. And it was their fault. They just woke up one day and decided that they're going to attack the United States, the moral, correct United States, for no reason whatsoever. A bunch of people decided to board three planes and just attack the United States, unleashing terror. For the first time in the United States, we experienced terror. And as he says, the agents of the terror were thugs and killers and part of a cult of death. Prior to the attacks of 9/11, there was no such thing as terrorism in this country. And prior to the attacks of 9/11, there was no such thing as wanton killings, mass killings. No thugs. And nobody, no agency, no governmental entity acting as though they were part of a cult of death. So we start off with a lie, but I suppose that the president is a student of a different kind of history, the Socratic history, that says there is a thing called the noble lie, as Socrates would have put it. If you lie, but you lie in the interest of a good thing, then we could overlook the lie. So we had a teachable moment there by the president, and it was a Socratic one. The telling of a noble lie. Well, of course, we know differently. I've said it before in this program. Anybody believing that terrorism began with Al-Qaeda is crazy and completely ignorant of history. And certainly, even if you are inclined to believe it, you should be able to take the word of other people who say, no, that's not the case. Ask any band of Native Americans whether terrorism was actually experienced in this country. Ask if they have a historical memory about genocidal acts, wiping hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of them out. Or, as the president put it, taking them out. Ask African Americans. Ask Asian Americans. Ask any group of oppressed people in this country as to their history, what their point of reference is about terrorism. And this is not in the 1600s and the 1700s and the 1800s and the 1900s. Just last summer, ask the people of South Carolina whether that young man who showed up in their church committed an act of terrorism. You just ask these things. And whether that was consistent with the history of the United States, consistent with the history of South Carolina, consistent with the history of the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacy and racism in this country. Ask them. But even as this president insists, this is not about Muslims, and it's just about a bunch of people who have taken it upon themselves to pervert Islam. But of course, he's telling you what it's not when it really is. Okay? It's not about Islam and these perverted people who are perverting Islam. It's about people deciding that they are going to unleash terror. And United States, we are the leader of the world. We are exceptional, after all. And we will deal with this in that spirit as well. This was a profound insult to the intelligence of the American people to have this president get up and say these things and present them not only as a truth, but as the truth that will now undergird official action and presumably with the advice and consent of Congress and with the permission of, quote, the American people, unquote. What he's saying, is, in effect, is be prepared. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be unleashed in your name. We will be fighting. We will be arming tens of thousands of soldiers all over the place. This war that he said he was ending is about to get its second wind. And with your money. And possibly with the lives of your sons and your daughters. Because the people in Congress are not sending theirs to fight. But they will start a war that your children will go and fight. In the name of American exceptionalism and democracy. And all of that, we're fighting terror, you know. Nowhere is there, not even in the media covering this, and especially in the media covering these events, and including the president's address, I was waiting with all the analysis. I was waiting for them to really make a very important connection here. But nobody did it. Because they have decided they will fulfill their expected role as aiders and abettors of propaganda. And that is why the issue of terrorism is never addressed as a consequence of U.S. policy. A consequence of U.S. policy. That is the ground zero of terrorism. But they too, and perhaps especially, they have taken on the job of telling us these noble lies that terrorism has nothing to do with U.S. foreign policy. Terrorism is about a bunch of hot-headed, wrong-headed, mule-headed people who've decided because they want to rule the world, they will wreak havoc and terror on people. Has nothing to do with policy. Has nothing to do with a context, a historical context, as to why these people in these various countries are so bent on destroying the United States and its allies. Because they're all doing the same thing. But we are not supposed to make this connection. We, the people, are not supposed to make this connection and demand that a critical element here of the solution still is missing. We still have stupid foreign policy. We still have imperialist foreign policy creating havoc and inviting lunatic reaction even. But we have a hand, we have a critical role in of responsibility here. The United States has gone all over the world and done all kinds of awful things all over the world, supporting the wrong people who were doing the wrong thing, giving them everything they needed in order to continue their oppressive governments, aiding and abetting genocide and slaughter, aiding and abetting oppression. And now you think that you can suddenly exempt yourself. And now you say, well, it's those people. Those are the ones doing the bad things. And now we got to go after them. Let's take Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was our guy. The United States kept him in office, gave him everything he needed to oppress his own people and slaughter them. Kept him going. Gave him arms with U.S. taxpayer money. Gave him mustard gas so he could be a more efficient killer. Gave him everything he wanted and kept him in office despite the fact that the people wanted him to go. And they wanted him to go in the method that they had devised, their democracy. They wanted to vote him out. But the U.S. says, oh, no, 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 no. He is our guy. We want him there. And so they carefully cultivated this pariah. They carefully cultivated this murderer. They maintained relations with him because, hey, he was our guy. And then there came a time when Saddam himself said, hey, you know, I got it pretty good here. I'm more and more powerful. And I don't have to take directions from you guys anymore. I want to do what I want to do. And that's when it became a problem, you see? And then he had to be, and I'm using the president's technical term for it, he had to be taken out. That's what they do all the time. This is a cycle. So the United States was part and party to terrorism at a mass scale in another country, in Iraq, in this case we're talking about. What do you think Iraqis are going to feel when their entire bloodline is wiped out with the sorties that were made, bombings, more bombs dropped in Iraq than in all of the years of Vietnam? What do you think they feel? And now you're going to get up in front of the world and say, guess what? We are the leaders of the world, and we are for freedom and democracy, and we believe in everybody being equal in the sight of God, and we love Muslims. Some of our best friends are Muslims. But it's those are the bad Muslims. We are after, not the good ones, we are after the bad ones. But we have to destroy the bad ones in order to help save some of the good ones. This is a kind of warped logic that we are presented with from a president. And this is supposed to pass muster. This is supposed to be logical. This is supposed to be policy. And all I need, says the president, I need Congress on board. Give me the authorization for the military use of force, which is to say, endorse my war effort. Give me the money that I need. Let me authorize a nice little military excursion here legally, since you won't let me do it by presidential fiat, by executive order. Let me do that and get a good war going. It will help the economy. And we will once again take the lead in the world as the exceptional America fighting against terror. Now, this is so insulting. I tell you, I had to restrain myself listening to this president position his argument this way. And yet, it is the standard approach. In times like this, everybody is clear that what is at issue here is the profile, America's profile in the world as a world leader. Here's a problem that even the president said he did not have a solution for. Remember, we did these programs right here on this program. We did this aspect of it where the president said he didn't have any solution. What does he say last night? He says, we will now resume. We will resume our pursuit of terrorists in any country in the world. He's telling people we are about again to break the law. We don't recognize international law. We will go wherever we think terrorism exists and wherever terrorists are. So you just open the door. You have a blank check, Mr. President. Go and pursue terrorism wherever you find it. Well, they found it in Syria, remember? ISIS, or ISIL as he calls it. ISIS was pursued, remember that show that we did, against international law. The United States decided it was going to invade Syria in pursuit of terrorists. We're not going to kill Syrians, and this is not about deposing Assad, Bashar al-Assad. This is about pursuing the evil terrorists who just happen to be in his country. But we're not killing anybody. No Syrians are going to be killed. Just a bad guy. You see what I mean? This is the kind of lawlessness that is being made to sound very logical, very appropriate. And I will guarantee you in the next couple of days, there will be poll after poll after poll showing that the American people favor whatever it is the president says is needed now, whatever the military says is needed now, whatever the right wing says is needed now, which is war. Let's ramp up the war effort here in pursuit of terrorism, because we can't have people shooting and killing each other in San Bernardino, California. Now, it happens that I've been taking a look at mass killings in history, at least the way they define it, the general media define it. And they said, you know, there have been mass killings in the United States, but funny, they don't go back beyond the 1980s. And even so, the record shows overwhelmingly that the people doing killings, mass killings, even from the 1980s that I've seen, the studies, they do these studies, they don't go too far back. because it gets a little dicey and a little bit troublesome, because you now have to deal with the facts of history. Terrorism as a standard method of mass control. Right here in the United States. In fact, some people would even go so far as to say they perfected it here. They perfected it. Mechanized terrorism. Efficiency of terrorism. Perfected here. On American soil. But they don't go too far back. But they go back far enough to say that there have been many, many mass killings in the United States. They don't get into ethnicities, as in who the killers are, who the victims are, because that too would be a little bit embarrassing. Now, they will report very gladly about the high murder rate among African Americans and Latinos, because they're killing each other. And they've invented an entirely different term for such killings. You heard the term black on black crime, for example. Black on black crime. It's a particularly pathological form of crime. Although, even the FBI would tell you that certain crimes have certain patterns. Murder being that people tend to kill people they know. People tend to kill close to home. People tend to kill people in their communities more often than killing outside of their communities. It's just the profile of such crimes. People tend to commit burglaries in their neighborhoods. These are the profiles of such crimes. The profile of mass killings in the United States is that the people who are doing the killing tend to be white and male. They tend to be loners. Or if acting in a group, they tend to be informed by racist ideas, born out of the crucible of the birth of this country. The principle on which it was founded, which is the superiority or supremacy of one group, requiring the domination of all other groups. So when they present this now as terrorism, you are likely immediately to dispense with the idea that it could be something else. And suddenly, we are not even discussing terrorism in the vein it ought to be discussed. What is this? Well, we know that the woman, Tashfeen Malik, had expressed ideological identification. She expressed a kind of favorable view of ISIS. Okay. That's what you say. Nobody's disputing that yet. But even if she said that, does that mean that terrorism was the reason? Was terrorism the reason? Was terrorism the cause? But it fits the narrative to present it as the cause. It may very well be. But what I'm saying is, let us at least follow the line here, and let us not jump to conclusions. But it is very important to jump to this particular conclusion as the foregone conclusion, almost, without any further deeper. The president said this thing is still being investigated, but already he's also saying it was terrorism. So When we hear about people being disgruntled, even now, the young man who shot all those people at the movie theater in Colorado, they're still probing to find out what was he thinking? What was the motivation? What was the reason for his act? Because, of course, it had to be complicated. He was a white young man. What was the reason for that young man going into the church in South Carolina and shooting 9 people dead, including an elected official? Which, of course, has not yet been labeled terrorism. But what was that? And now we hear about a manifesto. Because he was a complicated guy. It couldn't have been terrorism because he was capable of rather sophisticated reasoning. And there was a political motivation, perhaps, compounded by something personal. But they're still studying that guy and his motivation and what could it possibly have been for just shooting 9 people dead. What was the motivation for the young man who went into a primary school and shot all those children to death and shot his mother to death? Well, it's a complicated thing. It wasn't terrorism, was it? Because he needed to be studied. All aspects of his life needed to be studied before some conclusion could be arrived at. He had all kinds of ammunition. The Colorado shooter had bombs, had rigged his apartment, booby-trapped it, had a flak jacket, had assault weapons. But he is a troubled person with a deep psychological profile that needs to be studied even now. No one has discussed his affliction. So when we see this, the president and the media just went crazy with this thing. They just decided to stretch out right away. I mean, Chris Cuomo of CNN, Wolf Blitzer CNN, CNN generally, that was the order. The standing order was, it is terrorism, cover it as such, and in the process, make all Muslims pay the price. Okay? All Muslims must pay the price. Chris Cuomo, whose own father had said, the governor, Mario Cuomo, said there was no such thing as the mafia. He actually said that. There is no such thing as the mafia. Okay? You see what I mean? So we see these dichotomies and we have to question them. The president did a great disservice by standing before American people and saying, here's the deal. They're still investigating this, but we know it as an act of terrorism. Okay. Let's say I go with that. You want to say that your FBI has investigated and this is where it's headed. Fine, but don't try to tell me this is A, the first such act of terrorism. Don't de-link it from U.S. foreign policy. And don't try and tell people that terrorism started with Al-Qaeda. And don't start acting like you have a solution. You said you had no solution. There's been a big fight about this. You said you had no solution. And suddenly you have a solution. And now you become a hawk. The same president who says, well, I am not for any war. I'm trying to end the war over here in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now is saying, give me the permission. All I need is the official go. Everything is in place to now take on, quote, terrorism on a global scale. as if people can't spot that that is a huge shift in the president's position. And now everybody's trying to out-hawk each other. Let's have a war. And they're calling for a war because they know good and well they're not going to be in it. And their children are not going to be dying in it either. They will send your children. You and your kids could go and die. But the root, I come back to this again, the root of much of what we are experiencing as terror, you cannot de-link it, you cannot uncouple it. It is a fact, it is established fact that U.S. foreign policy in many, many, many ways has been the root cause of what we now are confronting as terrorism. And there seems to be no desire, A, to recognize that, or B, to change it. The United States, the president has made no commitment whatsoever to examine U.S. foreign policy, and nobody else is calling for it. Because in the end, that's what they all agree upon. We are the world leaders, which means we bomb whoever we want to. We kill off whoever we want to. We do whatever we want. We've created havoc, but that's what we wanted to do. We have the right to do that. Why? Because we're world leaders. And we are exceptional. What does that mean? It should mean to us, the United States does not recognize international law. It refuses to abide by the law. It gives no room whatsoever for any nation that is afflicted or affected by negatively by its foreign policy to appeal to reason. It does whatever it wants to do. The current situation in Syria is a perfect example. It actually has said, this president actually has said, that Saddam Hussein has got to go. What do you think that means? They openly advocate assassination of leaders. They openly interfere with the governmental processes of other nations. They do things that are intolerable by their standards, but they do them with alarming regularity and with the expectation that nothing will ever happen. So here we are in a situation where a horrible circumstance, all these people killed, it may very well be an act of terrorism. It may very well be that. But whether it is that or not, I am saying that the United States' use of this term, having termed it terrorism, and now embarking on a series of actions and policies predicated on this arbitrary use and definition of terrorism, is about to now deepen the problem, deepen the wound. And we have to call this out. The president did a horrible thing, and he has to be called out on it by progressive forces. And I don't see that much happening in the progressive world saying, hey, wait a minute. It is U.S. foreign policy here. That's the problem. That's what this and several other incidents, that's what they're all telling us. We have to look at the relationship between U.S. foreign policy and a lot of things that have happened, that are happening, and that will continue to happen, that will now be labeled terrorism. And again, it continues the horrible cycle, Now that we have more terrorism, there's going to be even greater response, more outrageous response and actions. That brings us to the end of the program today. I thank you for allowing me to stretch out. I really do. I do wish that we, as a nation, and certainly within the progressive community, we can begin the process of changing this dialogue here. This is horrible, what the president did last night. But yet, it is a useful service in that it tells us that you cannot make any distinction between the so-called liberal Democrats and the hawkish Republicans. They both agree. They all agree on the same principles, which are, of course, quite misguided. Keep it right here at prn.fn. Let me know how you think about these programs. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, I remind you sincerely from my heart, it's always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company, and I thank you for listening today. Bye-bye.